Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, bringing you your daily dose of all things on the Pittsburgh Steelers. You can find this podcast anywhere: Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, the New Hill Malay app, which isn't really new anymore. But you get my point. They're all on major streaming podcast platforms. And today, we got a lot to talk about the Steelers. It's Wednesday, March 25th, and we had an update late in the evening yesterday about the NFL draft and whether or not it will move. I'll get into the details on that. Then also, with Cam Newton being cut, there's more talk among social media and all forms of media whether the Steelers should make another move in free agency to get a quarterback. I'll talk about their chances in that. Then we'll review Todd Haley's recent interview that he's exposed more about his time with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And finally, we'll go over Dale Lawley's all-defensive team from the 2010s decade. Let's get into it. All right, everyone, it's hump day! We made it to Wednesday, y'all. Okay, so let's start off with some top news stories. There's two bits that we're going to get into. I'll go with the most recent one to lead off the opening segment. And that's a report that came from ESPN's Diana Russini and Adam Schefter. Now, these two came together to basically report that the NFL had to consider at some point last evening whether or not they should move the NFL draft, because the NFL General Manager Subcommittee unanimously recommended to Commissioner Roger Goodell that the days of the draft should be moved back due to concerns of the COVID-19 coronavirus. However, the NFL still stands firm that they're going to maintain their current draft dates, that's April 23rd through the 25th. At this time, all sources are telling Diana Russini and Adam Schefter that, and it's kind of interesting, because the NFL, in all this coronavirus mess, that's one of the many words that you can describe what the country, what the state the country is in right now. The NFL is the one source of entertainment and sports that has generated any talk. With no games being able to be played in any major sport, people have been dying for sports content. I can tell you just by listening to other shows, as soon as a signing is made, a cut is made, everyone wants to jump on it. And this is normally what we NFL nerds do anyways, right? But now even like basketball guys, hockey guys, baseball guys, they're all just like, well, what does this mean? What does that mean? So with the NFL draft being set for late April, there's really still no component of this that requires people to break social distancing to make it work. Now, it will discourage social distancing for sure, because it will be a major event. People will want to congregate to watch it. It is still a highly watched program. For example, I think it was 12 million people, maybe 13 million people tuned in for a single day of the NFL draft last year. That's more than people watch the Stanley Cup. That's more than people watch, you know, some preseason games. And that was one day. I think if you totaled all the days, it was a ridiculous amount of people that watched the NFL draft. But point being, this has to be a concern for some people because they're thinking about the health of others. Not just the fans, but think about this: is that when players, if they're not going to Las Vegas, because that's where the draft was supposed to be this year, if they're not going to Las Vegas to celebrate and to be part of this ceremony and be there when they get to put on the hat and step on the stage, which that's not happening anymore with what's going on, they're probably going to stay at home. And what's going to happen at home? They're probably going to be around friends and family, and that's going to discourage people staying away from each other and practicing the social distancing policies and suggestions that have been made to help flatten the curve of the COVID-19 virus. We're not going to get into the politics of that, but the point of is that that has to be a real concern for the NFL right now. And also, you do have to concern the fans. I was hosting a live show myself last year during the draft at Dave & Buster's here in Pittsburgh, and there were, you know, dozens of people all gathered around. I had Joey Bag of Donuts from the Bag of Donuts podcast. He was there with us. Dayan Kovacevic, my boss. We had a whole team of people, and then a whole bunch of fans that were asking us questions and huddled up because they wanted to talk about the Steelers drafting Devin Bush. You know, so it's a big deal, even when not necessarily your team has a huge pick coming. It's just another chance for people to talk about football, which is the top sport in the country. So, whether or not the NFL holds firm, I think there's going to be still be some more pushback. This, you know, this stuff, everyone thinks that they understand this, and then an hour comes out later and more information is revealed, and then there's a new recommendation or a new suggestion or a new policy. It's all, things keep happening at different paces. So trying to predict how this is going to play out is going to be difficult. I'm going to refrain from saying what definitely will happen. I do think, though, the NFL recognizes the weight that it has in culture right now. Think about it. They are the talk of the country. And normally they still are, even with March Madness and NHL and NBA and all that going on normally. They're still a huge part of the news cycle with free agency and the NFL draft. But right now they are the news cycle. There is no competition. And if the NFL was to push back the draft, you know, if they have the draft as scheduled right now, and you're assuming that no sports come back before then, if they come back till May, this continues to let them have a stranglehold on what sports talk is right now. But it also kind of, you could look at this as kind of a service to the country to say, hey, this is something for you to talk about. This is something for you to enjoy. Everyone's been stuck in their homes. This could be something that works out for people. So it's an interesting situation. We'll keep monitoring this, and I'll see what stories are floating out there, and keep reporting them on this show about this story, because this is a significant concern. In other news, we had the Panthers announce that they were most likely going to cut Cam Newton, their NFL MVP quarterback that's taken them to their only Super Bowl since Super Bowl appearance since they had Jake Delhomme and lost to the Patriots back in the early 2000s. Cam Newton, you know, a $20 million quarterback. He's been their guy for pretty much the entire 2010s. It makes sense. You got a new regime in there of coaches. You've got, you know, an injury-riddled quarterback. I get the thinking behind it. But it's also tough to justify when other teams are it's tough to justify when you look around the league and you see other quarterbacks that have dealt with injuries. And it'll be interesting to see what Cam Newton gets on the open market, because I've seen a lot of people talk about, like, oh, he stinks, but then and they say he shouldn't get anything. But then, I mean, this is a league where Sam Bradford was getting like $18 million contracts, and Sam Bradford never had the talent in one leg and in his whole body that Cam Newton had on one leg. So, I look at this and I think it's going to be interesting. But of course, whenever something like this happens, whenever a quarterback is coming to free agency, everybody and their mother thinks that the Steelers, we should go sign him, sign that guy, sign him, get him out of here, sign him. And I just don't know. Stop it. Just don't be one of those people. Because here's the issue. And I like Cam Newton. This is nothing against Cam Newton, but he's going to be too expensive. I mean, and the Steelers, I think they have about, like, what, $8 million in cap space, maybe a little bit less. But you look at that, Cam is not going to just take that. Now, they could restructure, they could make more moves and open up space to get Cam Newton. But Cam Newton doesn't want to play second fiddle to Ben Roethlisberger. Now, granted, he's in his early 30s. People are saying he's been ground down with the style of play over the years, and he may not have it anymore. He may be done in the NFL, all that jazz. I do think he deserves a chance to prove it. I just don't think the Steelers have the situation for him right now. You know, if Ben Roethlisberger had retired after that injury, maybe you could say, you know what, let's take a shot with Cam. That would have been a different story. But right now, the Steelers, they got Ben Roethlisberger. If you bring Cam Newton in, that's a superstar talent. And that guy commands a room. I mean, he was the face of that franchise. He was an NFL MVP. And if you go back and you look at how bad that receiving core is, that he was an MVP and led them to 15-1 and took them to a Super Bowl and almost beat a defense that dismantled Tom Brady just the week before, you gotta put respect on Cam Newton's name for what he's done in the NFL. And so I don't think it's light to think about him. And honestly, I mean, if we're just talking pure fantasy and the Steelers had, you know, just a pot of gold to give away money, absolutely I'd take him over Jameis Winston. I always gonna mess up that guy's name. Dang it. Anyways, But you look at Cam Newton, you know, he's obviously better than Jameis Winston. He has never had those character issues. I mean, you could say about the stuff at Florida when, you know, with maybe his dad with a laptop. But since he's been in the NFL, he's been a role model citizen. He's always been involved in charities and giving back. He's been a face of the NFL. He's always been a very good player. There's been times where he's not been patient with the media. But all in all, everybody has that, especially when they lose and cameras are put right in their face. He's a competitor. He's a liked guy. I get that. He's just not the guy for the Steelers right now. Believe me. If he was, the show would be losing its mind right now, because that would open up a whole bunch of more conversations and how the culture of the Steelers might be able to change with a new face at quarterback. Ben Roethlisberger has had his style. Like, you know, he's a guy, he doesn't want music on in the locker room while he's there. You know, and not that that's a huge deal, but it's just like the overall picture of Ben Roethlisberger and what he's done for the Steelers. Now, if Cam Newton comes, how does that change? He's another big quarterback. You know, what kind of system would you run with that guy at this stage of his career? Be a lot of interesting questions, but it's not going to happen, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it. Anyways, let's move on to the next segment. Right after this commercial break, we're going to dip into a recent interview of Todd Haley, where he talked a little bit about his time with the Steelers. All that right after this. All right, we're back. So let's dig into this Todd Haley interview that came out now. For those who might have trouble remembering, Todd Haley was the Steelers' offensive coordinator for most of the 2010s, I would say. He took over after Bruce Arians, and everyone was kind of happy about that because Bruce Arians had kind of worn out his welcome. There were a lot of those wide receiver screens that were thrown behind the line of scrimmage that didn't work in games, and people just thought the Steelers' a plan of attack was kind of bland. Ben Roethlisberger was also taking a lot of hits at the time, and that kind of changed with Todd Haley. He forced Ben Roethlisberger to have a quicker release, but there was always talk about, you know, oh, well, Ben doesn't like him because Ben liked Bruce Arians. And I remember, if you remember way back, like, think back and you might remember, like, some of the stories that floated out. Like, there was a story that came out that said, oh, Todd Haley and Ben Roethlisberger were in a hallway and they crossed each other's paths for the first time and didn't even say hello to each other. Oh, my God! And that was the kind of stuff that was happening at the time. It was just, you know, it's kind of what happens in the media when we're bored and we need content. You hype up this kind of stuff to kind of get you through the day. That's what I try not to do. I try to, you know, if I'm gonna do, you know, type up something, I'm gonna make fun of it. I'm gonna make a joke of it. That's why we do the mock draft Mondays. That's why we have that's why we try to have fun on the show. And where we take advantage of that. But I always try to keep it straight with you guys. Like, I could do a whole segment of why Jameis Winston, Jameis Winston. I did it again. Jameis, his name is Jameis. Stop it, Chris. But. And, you know, I could do a whole thing about Jameis Winston and why it was so great if he could get to the Steelers. And the same thing with Cam Newton. I just did a little blurb about Cam Newton, but I'm not going to do a whole shtick about that he would save the Steelers. You know, that's irresponsible. It's not what we do here at the Locked On Steelers podcast. So I want to talk about, so I think this is substantive. The information that Todd Haley gave in this interview, I think, is definitely worth talking about. Now, you got to understand that Todd Haley grew up around the Steelers. He as a kid, his dad worked for the Steelers, and then he as a kid got to be around them in the 70s. So he has connections here. And Todd Haley, when he was an offensive coordinator for the Steelers, the offense improved drastically. I mean, they became more creative. Ben got the ball out of his hands a lot more. They had more playmakers. And it definitely grew. But also, there was always talk about, what about the tension between him and Ben? What about the tension between him and Ben? And that was such a huge topic. Well, in this, Todd Haley kind of took a, you know, he kind of talked about and said that it was kind of overblown. And and all the things that happened with it, he talked about it in the interview. He said his goal coming in to the job was, of course, to address Ben Roethlisberger. And in a quote, Haley said, "My number one priority, direction given to me by Coach Mike Tomlin, was to change the way Ben played the game. They wanted to prolong his career and get him away from some of the backyard scrambling style play that he liked and was very successful at. So we worked together and evolved his game so he got the ball out faster and let his receivers make plays." Now, that's 100% accurate. That's exactly what everyone said for years. That had to be what Haley was focusing on, because Ben Roethlisberger became more judicious with the football. And young Ben Roethlisberger, as exciting as he was, the best times he was himself in the Bruce Arians days and the Ken Whitsunhunt days, if you go back to all those times, was when the Steelers were a running football team. They had a great defense, and you asked him to throw the football in spots. But when you asked him to try to air it out a lot, sometimes you'd get some red hot days, but a lot of times you'd get those days where he held onto the ball too long, and it was kind of just, he was seeing with his eyes. He wasn't seeing with knowing the X's and O's, and that can backfire. So Haley went on to talk about the quote unquote friction between him and Ben Roethlisberger, because people always talked about it. It was a national story. It was a local story. Everyone always assumed that he just wasn't liked. And Haley said this: the friction was overblown. We'd play golf and go out to dinner together. It was tough at the beginning for sure. He and Bruce Arians were very close, but I had nothing to do with Bruce leaving. My only regret is in not talking to Ben sooner about implementing the new offense, not talking to him right away. I didn't understand his sensitivity to losing a good friend in Bruce, but we had a good relationship and had fun together too. I enjoyed it there being with him. That is absolutely true. Because when you look at I could tell you just being able to see the training camp, these guys palled around together. If you saw some of the fun drills they did at camp, when sometimes the quarterbacks are just, kind of doing their own thing while the special teams or someone else works on a really serious drill, they'll do like this barrel drill where they would stack things up higher and higher, and they'd see who could land a throw inside these barrels and make it more difficult, and Todd Haley would compete with Ben Roethlisberger. And you can see these guys are just kind of having fun with it. I think from all my observations, I had the impression that they didn't hate each other. Now, I mean, there's obvious Ben made it public. He was kind of like, and he wasn't happy about the Bruce Arians situation of leaving. And Bruce Arians, the Steelers, and it was awkward how that happened, right? The Steelers announced that Bruce Arians retired, and then Bruce Arians got a job somewhere else soon after. So it's like, it was a little weird, and I could see why there would be some tension there. But Todd Haley's point is that, like, that was it. It was simply that Bruce Arians' departure was awkward, and it made life tough for them. And it's not easy to jump into that serious relationship. Think about yourself. If you're there's a coworker that you know about, but you've never met before, and you're being forced to work with them, and their partner just got axed, and you had nothing to do with it, but you think it was kind of weird, you'd probably think like, man, I'm not sure if I should address that. You might not handle it the best way. It's pressure, it's social awkwardness, that kind of stuff happens. It makes a lot of sense as to why that happened. But when talking about the success, and what the challenges were, Haley continued. He said, "When I was there, there were a number of key defensive guys that were retiring. The defense was in a serious transition. It wasn't the same defense of years before. That's how Ben and I came up with the 'we need to score 30 points in a game' quote. Mike and I met every week, and we'd go over how many points we'd need to score that week. Sometimes it was just an 'as many as we can.'" This also highlights to me the entire definition of most of that decade was, because the Steelers, they lost their supreme defense. It happens. They get old. No defense remains elite forever. And teams need to reload, and it takes time, because you don't just hit on your first few picks. It doesn't happen like that. Cowher didn't turn in the early 2000s defense right away from his Super Bowl his Super Bowl loss team in the mid 90s. It took a lot of the late 90s. It took 3 seasons of missing the playoffs, 2 straight losing seasons, for Cowher to kind of make some of those picks that started to give him some building blocks there. And then you saw, hey, okay, we got a piece here, we got a piece there, and now we're starting to build things there. And so during that time, that was the 2000, that was the 2010s. So Todd Haley's job was to get Ben to put as many points up on the board. And they did put a ton of points up on the board. I mean, they were competitive for most of the past decade. Mike Tomlin, again, still has not had a losing season. So you look at that, and I do think you got to say that that part was a success. But Haley would continue. He's like, I just think that wherever I've taken what I've been given and used it the best I could. In Arizona, we didn't have a great run blocking line, and Edgerrin James wasn't the back he used to be, but we had Kurt Warner and great receivers, so I pushed the passing game. I felt that was my strength. I wasn't system-oriented. Sure, I had my terminology and that, but I never tried to fit a square peg into a round hole. You play with guys you got. Bill Parcells always beat it into me that you find out what your players do best and get them to do it. We were lucky in Pittsburgh that we had Ben, great receivers, and Le'Veon Bell, so we could be balanced and with the run and the pass. So really great stuff there from SteelersTakeaway.com. Thanks to them for conducting this interview in the first place. Todd Haley has been kind of getting it back out there with the media. I think he took a break after his stint with the Browns didn't go so well. But he got a Twitter account. He praised Troy Polamalu for some of the things that he said about the Patriots, because Troy Polamalu openly called out the Patriots cheating as to why they were always able to beat the Steelers, which was interesting. We'll get into that later at some point. But, really good stuff there. But, Todd Haley, this guy's basically a lifelong Steeler. Now, granted, he did have his rough stretches in Pittsburgh. He was definitely, like the Tequila Cowboy incident, that's bad. And but this is a guy who he dealt with that, and he moved on, and and the team was able to deal with it. But again, this guy grew up around the Steelers. His dad was Dick Haley. He played at Pitt, and then he played for the Steelers in the NFL. Todd Haley got to be around a lot of stuff, and then eventually his dad goes on to coach of the Steelers, I believe. And that's where Todd Haley kind of got a lot of his experience. But he's a Pittsburgh guy, so it's really interesting to hear his perspective on things. But again, it just highlights there's often a lot of stories that you'll hear. Some of it's overblown. Oftentimes a lot of things are overblown, but there's certain nuggets that you can take, and it's always interesting to figure out which is the truth and which is the meat and which is the bone. Because the meat you can chew, you can digest, and you can say, okay, you can add that to part of just your energy and just thinking like, oh, okay, I know that. But the bone is often just like, that's not the stuff that you want to take from a story. So very interesting stuff there from SteelersTakeaway.com. I suggest you go check out the interview there. They did a full thing on it in their website. Great stuff. Okay, going to do one more break, then we're going to go dive into who makes Dale's All-Decades team. I'll challenge every single one. Well, I'll test. I'll look at them. I won't challenge them all if they're good. But I'll go over which ones I like and don't like, and we'll see who ends up getting the vote when all this is said and done. But doing that right after this. All right, so let's get back to it. Final segment, going to talk about Dale giving his entry on who the top defensive players were for the 2010s decade. He gets an official vote with the Pro Football Writers, the Pro Football Hall of Fame selectors, about who makes the All-Decade team for the 2010s. So I respect Dale's opinion, but I'm going to go line by line, and you let me know what you think. Are we overlooking somebody? Is this list good? I read through this list, and I actually really liked most of it. There's few parts of it that I think are that far off. But let's start. We're going to start with defensive end. He has on the first team, the obvious one, J.J. Watt. Got to get him in there. Cameron Jordan, Julius Peppers, and Khalil Mack. Second team for defensive ends, Terrell Suggs, Daniel Hunter, Chandler Jones, and Calais Campbell. It's tough because you look at some of the players that played in this era, and you got some guys on the back end of their career, some guys on the front end of their career. You gotta have J.J. Watt. This was his decade. He was a three-time defensive MVP. It's ridiculous. Cameron Jordan, a beast, and a guy that I don't think ever really got his due nationally. It seems like, I've always highly respected him, but I don't hear a lot of people talk about him the way that he should be talked about. Julius Peppers, just a freak of nature for how long he's been in the NFL and been good in the NFL. He's bounced around with the Packers and the Panthers and God knows whoever else. he's done a very good job. And Khalil Mack has just been a pure athletic monster in the back end of the decade, storming onto the scene with the Raiders and now with the Bears. He is an ultimate game changer. I get this. Now, it's always interesting to me the status of a defensive end, because, you know, defensive end, Cam Hayward used to be a defensive end. Now he's a defensive tackle. Also, that we'll bring up that on when we get to that part of the list. But, you know, but with the status of defensive ends now is you're kind of the big edge rusher. But Von Miller doesn't fit this status because he's a linebacker. So it's interesting to see how that works out. I look at this and I say, what part of the defensive ends, what edge rushers did you feel that were left off there? But let's keep moving on. We'll come back to this point when we see some of the other positions. Now, we get to defensive tackle. First team, Aaron Donald, obviously. Gotta have him. Fletcher Cox, I think that's another obviously. But also first team, Geno Atkins and Gerald McCoy. Now, Gerald McCoy, superstar. I think he just had a rough time in Tampa Bay. Geno Atkins, very good player. Superstar? I struggle because Geno Atkins was a great player for the Cincinnati Bengals, but I don't know because when I look at the rest of this list, Cameron Hayward, you know that guy wrecks people. He takes people apart and yeah, sure, Geno Atkins did that too, but Cam Hayward is a leader. Like, I don't know, I would take Cam Hayward over Geno Atkins myself. Now, I know I'm a homer, I look at this and I think that's one place where I would object to Dale's list. But I mean, overall, I mean, Ndamukong Suh, I mean, he was just unstoppable at times when he played for the Lions, and then he bounced around the league for a bit. Jarrell Casey, who just got traded away by the Titans. You know, he deserves credit there. And Haloti Ngata, I think he was always one of the terrors against the Steelers. And you guys remember when I did that Throwback Thursday about him, when it came to when he broke Ben Roethlisberger's nose, he was absolutely part of that. So, I mean, I don't know, I guess I could put Geno Atkins back in that consideration right there. But all in all, Haloti Ngata, I might bump him up above Jarrell Casey and I struggle to say Sue, but a good list there overall. I'm not mad at any of the people that made that for Dale. So moving forward, you got linebacker, some the obvious ones. And again, this is why I'm not mad at this list overall. It's guys that the media guys are popping in my head. First two, Luke Kuechly, Bobby Wagner. Thank you. Sign me up. I need that. Justin Houston, Patrick Willis, Von Miller, and Lavonte David. That's your first team. I don't know how the first team thing works because there's like six linebackers here. So like, but that's not a first. There's no first team defense that has six linebackers unless you're going to the Bear defense, and that's ridiculous. But you know, all in all, that's a great group right there. Bobby Wagner, another guy I think doesn't get enough hype when it comes to talking about guys. Patrick Willis, what could have been if he had just not retired. Maybe he had some other stuff going. He obviously did have some other stuff going on. But I mean, that guy was the next Ray Lewis. I mean, he was just unstoppable in the middle of the field. He just caused fear and havoc and was a huge part of that. Well, he was the soul of that 49ers team and defense that almost won a Super Bowl against the Ravens. Von Miller, you know, just one of the best edge rushers of the day. He might be the best edge rusher of the decade. You know, J.J. Watt wasn't always edge rusher. He would bounce around inside sometimes, and he'd play that D lineman role. But I look at Von Miller, and I'm just like, whoa! The path that he carved for years, and what he did to get them the Broncos that Super Bowl win with Peyton Manning, that had a noodle arm and a fused neck. I mean, that Von Miller, to me, he was one of the players of the decade, and he'll be in the Hall of Fame some point. But the second team for linebackers, DeMarcus Ware, yeah, I get it. C.J. Mosley, whoa. Cameron Wake, Tamba Ali, Clay Matthews, and Robert Mathis. I get DeMarcus Ware. I get Tamba Ali. He was massive for a time. Clay Matthews, obviously, I agree with that one. Cameron Wake, okay. Robert Mathis, I honestly thought he was a defensive end or an edge rusher, but I guess that's where this kind of, you know, if you look around at other people's ballots, there's edge and outside linebackers, and it's kind of a mix there. You know, there's people that kind of float people around. That's part of the defensive struggles of who plays what position. CJ Mosley, I mean, yeah, I get that he played longer. It's just a reminder of how sad the Ryan Shazier situation is, because he was going to be on this list had he not gotten hurt. And who knows what that Steelers defense could have done in 2017, because they were playing at a high level when he was involved. And, you know, and imagine this team with him now on it, who knows where the Steelers would be. But that it makes a lot of sense that Ryan Shazier couldn't make that list. Dale brings up good points. You know, he can't throw TJ Watt on it because he came in too far in the end. And we saw James Harrison's prime only at the very beginning of the decade. So, you know, it's tough to fit that in. You know, if this was kind of the 5 to 10 years of James Harrison's career, absolutely. But if we're just starting at 2010 was when, you know, him and Troy Polamalu were still dominating, and he hung around with the Steelers for a while, but then he bounced around the league, came back, and he wasn't the same for most of the decade. So moving on to cornerback, and this is one of the more fun positions to debate about. Darrell Revis, Richard Sherman, Patrick Peterson are your first team corners. Second team, Stephon Gilmore, Joe Gilmore, Jalen Ramsey, and Chris Harris. I think that's a really solid list. You know, I look at Darrell Revis. He's, you know, one of the greatest cornerbacks that I've ever seen. And Richard Sherman, you know, he led the Legion of Boom. I gotta look at that and think, man, that dude's legit. So I like those picks. Patrick Peterson has always been interesting to me because, like, he's a great athlete, one of the greatest athletes. But he he's a great cornerback. But you know, he never had the chance to really shine in the big moment and have those things like Richard Sherman and Darrell Revis did. You know, Revis got a Super Bowl ring. Richard Sherman got a Super Bowl ring, and he you know, everyone remembers when he you know, tipped the ball away that was intercepted, and then he was talking about, you know, blah, 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 sorry ass receiver like Crabtree on me, and, you know, just things like that. Like, what was your defining moment? And Patrick Peterson doesn't have that, and that's tough for me to relate to. Whereas Stephon Gilmore, I think that he deserves some praise there. Jalen Ramsey is, ooh, he's bad. But here's the thing: if you're saying that about Jalen Ramsey, then you got it. That if you're saying about T.J. Watt that he can't get in, then you got to say the same thing about Jalen Ramsey, I guess. But I don't know. I look at Jalen Ramsey and I think that he should be on here. I think he's that good of a cornerback. Chris Harris, I think that he should be actually higher up. I think he was much more important to what the Broncos were doing than people gave him credit for. But all in all, good list. Moving on to safety. Eric Berry, Earl Thomas, and Eric Weddle make the first team. Cam Chancellor, Harrison Smith, and Devin McCourty make the second team. Now, of course, everyone's probably thinking, well, what about Troy? Well, Troy only played, what, 4 years of the decade? So that's tough to calculate for. Ed Reed was also in the back end of his career. You know, Charles Woodson, who actually comes up later in this list, in a weird added position. They have a defensive back position, which I'll just say now, first team is, I guess, an added defensive back, as guys that could swap between cornerback and safety. Charles Woodson and Aqib Talib made the first team of this group. Malcolm Jenkins and Tyrone Mathieu, the Honey Badger, made the second team. You know, that's such a weird group. Charles Woodson also was on the back end of his career, but he did win a Super Bowl with the Packers against the Steelers. So that deserves some credit there. Earl Thomas, absolutely. Like, he might have been the best safety of the decade. Eric Berry was on that kind of a pace with the Chiefs. He just had so many unfortunate just situations. He had cancer, he had injuries, it mounted up. That was just a sad story because Eric Berry was one of the true leaders in the NFL and a guy that was so fun to watch play the safety position. Eric Weddle, I always liked. I don't know. I feel weird putting him on that first team for the entire decade when you got, I mean, honestly, I'd take Cam Chancellor over Eric Weddle at times. You know, I'd even take just the early part of 2010s, Troy Polamalu over Eric Weddle. But You know, I get what he's saying there. Longevity. Eric Weddle did play the whole decade practically. Moving on, and we got a punter because punter is technically defense, I guess, because they come in on the they come in for the defense. They're helping them get the ball back. Johnny Hecker and Brett Kern are your top guys. Hecker is definitely the guy. Andy Lee from Pitt makes the second team with Shane Leckler. Those guys are fine, but we're not going to talk about those guys because they're punters. Who cares? But finally, coach. Now this is interesting because there's two first team and two second team coaches, and the first team, obviously you got Bill Belichick. Dale listed Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll as the top two for the first team. His second team was Andy Reid and John Harbaugh. Whew. So he leaves off Mike Tomlin, and he talks about why he left off Mike Tomlin. And because he looked at Belichick, obviously, we know why. Pete Carroll, in this decade, won a Super Bowl, went to two. Mike Tomlin went to one. He's only behind, and those are the only two he has less wins than during the decade. But again, you look at all four of those guys, they're Super Bowl champions during the decade. So that gives that, to me, that gives them an edge. If you're just creating a list of who was the best in the decade, you know, I'd get that. Even though, you know, Mike Tomlin definitely, I think, like, if Andy Reid didn't win this last year, he can't make the list. Because Mike Tomlin, I think, did a much better job with his teams for years than Andy Reid. He just got Patrick Mahomes the last 2 years and has been on fire. But you know, you deal with what you got, and Andy Reid deserves that credit because he won the Super Bowl. John Harbaugh came on, you know, he had a Super Bowl early in the decade. He's come on late again. But that's an interesting one because, you know, if we're, you know, when we're doing the decade talk, you have to put him there. But, you know, it's interesting because you put it that way, but you're probably thinking, so is John Harbaugh definitely a better coach than Mike Tomlin? When, you know, John Harbaugh, he had three straight losing seasons. He was about to get kicked out of Baltimore, and then they promoted Lamar Jackson, and now all of a sudden they're back to it. And, you know, people are like, oh, well, that's just their genius. I'm like, well, if there was their genius, why didn't they start him, you know, to begin everything? And that'll be an interesting debate of where Tomlin and Harbaugh are there. It's a great coaching rivalry that we get to see twice a year. Part of what makes the Steelers and Ravens great. But what do you think of Dale's list? Do you agree with him? Do you disagree with him? Let me know on Twitter at Carter Critiques. Thanks for listening to the show. Tomorrow, got a special treat for you guys. We're bringing back a former co-host, not Tony, bringing back John Ledyard, NFL draft expert. He's going to be coming on with me to talk about different things all in the NFL draft. I'll ask him a bunch of questions about what he values. We see things differently. I've read John for years. He's been around for quite some time, even before I started like really writing. So it'll be interesting to hear that conversation. You want that? Stay tuned with the Locked On Steelers podcast. We'll be back tomorrow. Again, subscribe to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all the major streaming platforms. If you leave a 5-star review and a positive comment, I will read your comment on the show. Thanks to all those who have already left comments. You really help make the show better, and you help me get the word out about it, which is really what needs to happen there. Thanks again for all those who listened. Also, join the Facebook group by searching Locked On Steelers on Facebook. You can join the group, talk with hundreds of other Locked On listeners every day. We talk about new topics. You can post there yourself. It's a fun place to be. Join us in the Locked On Steelers community there. Until tomorrow, I'm Chris Carter. Talk to you soon.